Last Friday in Yemen, a U.S. drone strike killed two al-Qaeda targets, Anwar al-Awlaki and Samir Khan. The two were both unique figures in al-Qaeda. First, they were both Americans. Secondly, their command of English meant they could communicate directly with would-be radicals in the West. Khan was reportedly the editor of Inspire, the al-Qaeda English language magazine. Al-Awlaki worked in front of the camera through internet sermons the government believed were designed to inspire militancy among Muslims here at home. Jared Brockman is the author of Global Jihadism, Theory and Practice, and has closely followed the way that Al-Awlaki and Khan have gotten their message to the West. Jared, welcome back to OTM.
Thanks.
Are the deaths of these men a big blow to al-Qaeda?
It's devastating. I mean, Al-Awlaki and Samir Khan had revolutionized the way that al-Qaeda was able to reach out and touch the West. And there's really nobody left on the bench that has what's taken those two decades of work to develop. For a long time, a lot of kids in the West who supported al-Qaeda still felt like they were playing second fiddle to their Arabic counterparts. They didn't have a lot of access or forums that they could kind of spout off in, and they weren't really valued within the al-Qaeda global movement. Al-Awlaki and Samir Khan changed all that.
And what are they credited with achieving?
They were able to inspire and direct numerous attacks. We have direct email correspondence between Al-Awlaki and Nidal Hassan, the alleged Fort Hood shooter. We have cases of, say, an individual who just watched Al-Awlaki's videos and took it upon herself to go out and stab a British member of parliament. We have directed attacks that Al-Awlaki was clearly involved with, Omar Farouk Abdelmutallab, the alleged underwear bomber, and numerous other examples of those kinds of, you know, operational strikes.
They came to these roles through very different paths. Tell me how they got to be where they got to be.
Samir Khan saw himself as kind of a pseudo-intellectual. He developed kind of his propaganda skill set working out of his parents' home in Charlotte, North Carolina. For years, he was just posting online to these Islamic forums, and soon posting wasn't good enough, so he started his own blog. That wasn't good enough, so he started his own pro-Al-Qaeda media outlet here in the United States. That wasn't good enough, so he started making videos, and eventually he made his own English-language pro-Al-Qaeda magazine. You know, Samir Khan knew what it was like to be one of these kids who wanted to support al-Qaeda, couldn't do it, and took it upon himself to change how the game was played.
Tell me about Al-Awlaki. How did he get to be sort of the Tokyo Rose of militant Islam?
You know, if you go back and listen to a lot of his sermons, virtually none of them have anything to do with violence, or at least openly espouse violence. What he does is provide a very distilled, back-to-basics understanding of Islam.
Often, these sermons were in no way incendiary. Let's just listen to him talking about obesity.
Umar ibn al-Khattab would encourage exercise, and he didn't like obesity. In fact, he said, beware of overeating. If you are overweight, even if it's caused by genetic reasons, try to lose weight.
I should make it clear that while sometimes he was talking about obesity, a recurring theme was that Islam is under attack. Did he ever, though, issue orders, say you must act, you must defend Islam?
No, the way Al-Awlaki would do this is he would let you do the math. He would present you with the problem. He'd say you're under attack. Islam is under attack. You have at your disposal an arsenal of tools you can employ. What are you going to do? Are you going to live up to your duty? Or are you going to sit back and let Islam be conquered? So people would feel more invested because they came to the conclusion themselves. He wasn't giving these command statements like Zawahiri bin Laden, shaking his finger at people saying, you must do this. Because for his constituency, a lot of them hadn't bought off on the idea. A lot of them didn't support al-Qaeda, or at least weren't sure if they could. And so Al-Awlaki brought a lot of fence sitters who otherwise may not have been interested in the al-Qaeda ideology over with him when he joined up. So I think this opens a massive chasm that will be almost impossible for al-Qaeda to fill.
Well, that's an optimistic view. Others are less optimistic. What's the argument that says that these roles will be filled rapidly by others?
I mean, I think the biggest counterargument is that the genie's already out of the bottle, right? That Al-Awlaki's already flooded the internet with his sermons. Khan has already produced now 7 Inspire magazines plus a whole backlog of his previous magazine. And so the movement itself will fill that role. In many ways, you know, I make that argument myself, but I think in the absence of having a rallying figure like Al-Awlaki, it will quickly dissipate in terms of the coherence and lethality of that movement.
Is there a precedent for targeting not just American citizens, but propagandists as opposed to guys with their fingers on triggers?
It's a complicated question because not a lot of open source information has been released about the role that Al-Awlaki played operationally. So I think this is why you see the Obama administration calling him the chief of external operations as opposed to focusing on his propaganda role. By saying he was the main target, they kind of get themselves out of that question. Samir Khan, however, it seems to me, was purely a propagandist. I think that's why the Obama administration is saying his death wasn't the focus. He just happened to be in the vehicle. This administration has showed that it's willing to take these kind of unprecedented steps in order to take out unprecedented individuals.
Jared, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Jared Brockman is the author of Global Jihadism, Theory and Practice.